train traffic along the Columbia River, impacts on First Nations, and more. Again, that's the community forum on Zenith Tar Sands expansion on Tuesday, March 26th at 7 p.m. at City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, this is Susan Cecil, and I love KBOO. Do you love KBOO? Call us at 503-231-8032, extension 302, and tell us why you love KBOO. We'll use the audio during our upcoming spring membership drive. It takes the community to support the community radio station, KBOO! Yay! The number again, 503-231-8032, extension 302. This has been Susan Cecil for KBOO Portland, signing out. Bye!
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, it's officially springtime and the moon is going to be huge.
The Blue Mountain Biodiversity Project wins its campaign against the U.S. Forest Service.
And fracking in Wyoming has been blocked.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 20th, 2019. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. A wildfire southeast of Salem has jumped the Saniam River and prompted evacuation orders. The wildfire was reported Tuesday afternoon off Oregon 22 near Lyons, 41 miles upriver from Salem. Marylin School in Lyons has been established as an evacuation shelter. Classes were canceled today at the school, and the North Saniam State Recreation Area is also closed. The cause of the blaze is under investigation.
The Portland Police Bureau released a report Tuesday that documents and quantifies the troubled relationship between police and the community. KBOO's Emery Mort has more.
The Portland Police Bureau released a report offering a stark look into troubled community perception of police and negative officer experiences of their job. Outside consultants composed the 52-page report based on large community surveys, focus groups of officers and community members, public meetings, and one-on-one interviews. The report can be found on the city's website and stands to inform the PPB's five-year plan set to be released in the coming weeks. Some numbers from the report. 45% of American Indians and 38% of Portland's African Americans, quote, do not trust the police at all. Are police policies fair and effective? 73% of all Portlanders and 85% of African Americans believe that that's true only sometimes, if at all. Fractured community attitudes towards police are further described by survey results showing that over 70% consider police outsiders, and a majority feel they don't always have the best interests of the communities they serve in mind. When it comes to listening to community concerns, only 22% of the public thinks the police listen, quote, a lot or always. The biggest barrier between police and the community, according to the public, in terms of listening to community concerns, is excessive use of police force. To the community, there is little authentic interaction, and whatever there is seems forced. Attitudes and perceptions within the police itself. Mental health response is a priority for police. That's the belief of 92% of officers. But many don't think the Bureau has the necessary resources to really meet the crisis. In community engagement, police think lack of staffing prevents them from engaging as much as they want and in the way that they want. The community and the police agree on a number of things. One is that the police need better mental health and wellness care. The community wants to know police are getting the help they need, and police don't feel good about the mental health they're getting. Over half of police feel exhausted, frustrated, burnt out, but few feel comfortable talking to their superiors about that. Many within the department feel mental health needs are stigmatized, and that the culture within the department is not aligned with behavioral health needs. When it comes time to be accountable and make progress as a bureau, the community and police also seem to be in agreement. Almost half of Portland police don't believe change is possible. Meanwhile, according to the report, the community, quote, believes accountability in the PPB is lacking. Thanks to the Portland Mercury's Alex Zielinski for her reporting on this report. I'm Emery Mort for KBOO News.
The Portland City Council took on hecklers and verbal abusers at its regular session today. Commissioners today enacted an emergency ordinance to allow the Portland City Attorney's Office to represent city employees harassed by members of the public. Previously, they had to hire their own individual attorneys to prosecute anyone harassing them because of their work at the city. Commissioner Chloe Udaly broke down in tears as she described how her life has been changed by the issue. KBOO's Jason Hsu gathered these voices of the discussion at this morning's City Council meeting.
So if somebody in here is saying something and you think it's so outrageous and you go, you know what? That voice of dissent, I'm going to shut that person down. I don't care what it takes. I'll work through the DA. I'll work through anybody I can, and I'll get it done. And I'll even have my city attorney. We will stop them. Let's go for a restraining order. Let's do this. Whatever it takes. I just want their voice shut down.
Hardesty?
Thank you, and thank you, Tracy, for your presentation. I also support the changes that are before us today. And though I understand the fear of what the attorney will do with this new power, I also understand the necessity to make sure that my employees are safe when they come to work in the city of Portland.
You daily.
As a person who has had to navigate this world as a woman for the last 48 years and who has faced harassment, intimidation, and physical violence due to the simple fact that I am a woman, I'm not remotely interested in what any man thinks about me feeling threatened. I don't care what my colleagues think. I don't care what any of you think. Based on my lived experience, it is reasonable for me to fear for my safety when I am being stalked, harassed, insulted inside my work, outside my work, at my home, on my free time, when I'm sitting outside the Senate chambers in Salem taking a break after giving testimony. That was on Monday. I have experienced frequent ongoing harassment here, and I have feared for my physical safety, that of my family, my staff, and city employees, and it is unacceptable, and it makes me sick to hear community members making excuses for that behavior.
You're interrupting. Listen, please sit down. You had your turn, and you do not get to say anything else.
Well, he's disrupted multiple times. I just want to note that. I was surprised recently after being stalked half a mile on foot, walking to lunch by a member of the public after I repeatedly asked him to stop, that the city could not assist me with obtaining a stalking order, that I would have, sit down and shut up, Lightning.
Okay, we're gonna take a 3-minute recess.
As I was saying, I was surprised to learn that I would have to use my own time and financial resources, both of which are limited, to obtain a stalking order against someone who was stalking me because of what my job is, because of my role. And as far as I know, when I was elected to city council, I didn't give up all of my rights. I am also a member of the public. I am also the people, as Lightning likes to say. And it's just unacceptable to treat anyone the way that we are sometimes treated. I want to thank the chief city attorney, Tracy Reeves, for taking the initiative to draft this new policy. Commissioner Hardesty and her policy director, Derek Bradley, for making sure this effort was brought forward and that we all took part in its support. As you can see, it's an emotional issue for me. I love this job, and I'm good at this job. This behavior by a couple handfuls of people has changed the way I navigate my city. It has limited the way I interact with the public. It makes me feel isolated and less connected to the community that I'm supposed to be represented. And it's so disappointing to hear from people who I often agree with and I respect that they don't think that I deserve to feel safe and have support from the city in order to do my job. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
I vote aye. The ordinance is adopted.
A new ballot initiative would allow cannabis users to smoke or vape in designated cafes and at social events. The Legalization Justice Act of 2020 would also allow Oregon to sell cannabis across state borders and would give more rights to workers who use cannabis while they are not at work. It will also direct cannabis industry tax money to communities that have been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. The initiative is being led by Flight Lounge co-owner Leah Flynn, world-famous cannabis cafe owner and Normal executive director Madeline Martinez, and journalist Angela Baca. Organizers must get more than 120,000 signatures to get the initiative on the Oregon ballot.
The Blue Mountains Biodiversity Project yesterday scored a major victory in their campaign against federal officials' forest plan revision. Karen Coulter spoke with KBOO's Lisa Loving about what happened and why it's important.
Well, last year we filed an objection through Earthrise Law Center, who submitted it on our behalf and for Friends of the Clearwater, which is an environmental protection organization in Idaho, to an objection to the Blue Mountains Forest Plan revision, which would guide the management of three Blue Mountains forests in eastern Oregon for the next 10 or 15 years or more. And so what we're announcing now is that the decision was withdrawn, apparently in response to our objection and possibly to the objection of other environmental groups as well. And this is good news for us because it's a terrible forest plan with very few enforceable standards. So we're going to use the time in the interim to try to strengthen the protections in the existing forest plans through the Forest Service rather than to allow them to get them.
What are you going to work on next?
Well, we'll continue to pressure the Forest Service to revise the forest plan revisions in a good way by strengthening existing good standards rather than weakening them, and updating the science in the forest plans because they're seriously outdated from 1990. And also to incorporate consideration of climate change, which the forest plan revisions don't consider at all. Neither do they consider the effects of forest carbon sequestration and the need to preserve that, nor do they consider the effects of climate change to wildlife and to tree species and forest ecology in general. Other things we're working on right now, there's a huge sale coming up called the Ellis Timber Sale, which is on two different districts of the Umatilla and would log a minimum of 59,690 acres commercially and up to a maximum of 110,000 acres. It's not clear how much commercial logging would be in the rest of it, but this is a very unprecedented scale for a timber sale, so we need lots of volunteers to come out to field survey it because our field surveying is the backbone of our work and creates evidence for our comments, our objections, and potential litigation. And then next year, we may be having to field survey an even bigger timber sale, which is under the guise of a project called Blue Mountains Forest Resiliency Project, which is a serious misnomer, and would log or burn about 600,000 acres. That's more than 500,000 acres. And looking at their maps, it looks like that would cover half of the Ochoco National Forest all at once, and a third of the Umatilla and the Wallowa-Whitman all at once, if you discount the roadless areas and the wilderness areas they're not going into. But this is very unprecedented scale of and pace of logging that is now happening in eastern Oregon, and it's definitely being bolstered by the Trump administration, who wants to, them to double or triple the cut. The forests are really threatened right now under the Trump administration, and there'd been increasing scale and pace of logging even before that. And we need to build a new forest movement with a higher profile if we're going to protect the carbon sequestration that the forests offer, which is absolutely essential for slowing catastrophic climate change. James Hansen, the climate scientist, has said that even if we switch over entirely to renewable forms of energy, don't use fossil fuels at all, if we don't protect the carbon sequestration in the major sources of carbon sinks, such as the oceans, the forests, and the soils, we're still going to have catastrophic climate change. And yet, the logging of the forests is going on at a tremendous rate and planned for even more. It's already ecologically unsustainable, and it's about to be escalated. So we really need the help of people to donate to our project so that we can afford to do this work. And also we need volunteers out in the field. And for volunteering, they can call me at 541-385-9167.
For KBU News, I'm Lisa Loving. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for news from the BOO. At 6, it's Making Contact. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, we have Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be increasing clouds, the super warm moon, and a low of 43. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy with a high of 60 and calm wind. Today in history, in 1928, American television personality Fred Rogers was born in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. Rogers is best known for being the showrunner and host of the television series Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which aired from 1968 to 2001. Rogers passed away in 2003. More than 7,600 people attended his memorial. The quote of the day is from Fred Rogers, who said, quote, "We live in a world in which we need to share responsibility. It's easy to say, it's not my child, not my community, not my world, not my problem. Then there are those who see the need and respond. I consider those people my heroes."
A federal judge late yesterday temporarily blocked fracking on over 300,000 acres in Wyoming, saying the Interior Department illegally failed to consider the climate impact of leasing public land to oil and gas developers. While U.S. District Court Judge Rudolph Contreras' decision focused on the Trump administration's land sales in Wyoming, environmentalists said the ruling could have national implications. According to Jeremy Nichols, it, quote, calls into question the legality of the Trump administration's entire oil and gas program, end quote. That's from the director of Wild Earth Guardians Climate and Energy Program. In his ruling, Contreras ordered the Interior Department's Bureau of Land Management to redo its analysis of hundreds of drilling projects in Wyoming to account for their potential climate impacts.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A win for treaty rights after the U.S. Supreme Court rules in favor of the Yakima Nation. Emily Schwing has more.
In 2013, Washington State's Department of Licensing demanded $3.6 million from the owner of a gas station on the Yakima Reservation. The state said the gas he transported across state lines from Oregon by way of a state highway was supposed to be taxed. But attorneys for the Yakima Nation argued that a clause in the tribe's 1855 treaty with the U.S. government exempts tribal members from those taxes. U.S. Supreme Court justices heard arguments in the case last fall. The 5-4 ruling affirms a decision made by Washington State's Supreme Court just over a year ago. Tribal attorneys are calling it a landmark decision. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing.
The Shakopee Mittawakaton Sioux community in Minnesota is deploying a mobile clinic to help a Nebraska tribe recover from flooding. The Santee Sioux Nation's health clinic was flooded from recent weather. The mobile care center will help tribal members get basic services while cleanup continues. Bottled water and freeze-dried food are also being provided. The mobile unit was launched in 2007 to assist Native people in rural areas with medical, dental, and vision services. It's been deployed 600 times, serving thousands of people. Communities in the Midwest are currently recovering from flooding from rain and snowmelt. March 20th is National Native HIV/AIDS Awareness Day. The Indian Health Service is using the day to highlight efforts to end hepatitis C and HIV and AIDS in Indian country. President Trump's 2020 budget proposal includes $25 million to expand partnerships between the IHS and Native communities to address HIV. Plans for the budget include treatment, case management, testing, and support care services. Healthcare professionals and Native advocates say stigma is still a barrier in Native communities when it comes to addressing the diseases. The president of the American Indian College Fund reacts to the national college admissions scandal. Cheryl Sitting Bull is the president and CEO of the College Fund, which works to increase the number of American Indians working to obtain a college degree.
The system we already feel is rigged against us as Native peoples because there are so many barriers. We don't even get recruited. And so right from the start, we don't have the same kind of access or opportunities that many others have. And then this situation really shows privileged intentions of parents to kind of fly in the face of giving opportunities to not just my Native people, but other people of color. So we're pretty upset.
The American Indian College Fund plans to release a statement on the national scandal. Sitting Bull says it will look at how privilege has damaged trust in higher education. She made the comments this week at the American Indian Higher Education Consortium Conference held this year in Billings, Montana. The scandal, according to federal investigators, accuses wealthy families of paying millions of dollars to a businessman to help get their children into college by cheating on admissions. The Houston Chronicle reports three Native American inmates in Texas will not have to cut their hair. The men say long hair is part of their religion. They recently won a years-long court battle against the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Rules require men to have short hair or face punishment. The inmates and their attorneys argued it violates religious freedom. The state is reportedly considering an appeal. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
For Native Americans affected by domestic violence, the Strong Hearts Native Helpline offers peer-to-peer support and resources. It's safe, confidential, and toll-free at 844-7-NATIVE. Program support by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center. Support by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, working to ensure tribal colleges and universities are included in our higher education system. Info on 37 tribal colleges and universities at aihec.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
European authorities today fined Google $1.7 billion for antitrust violations in the online advertising market, in their third ruling against Google since 2017, with total fines of $9.3 billion. The European Union said the web giant had violated antitrust rules by imposing unfair terms on companies using its search bar on websites in Europe. Google has not yet paid anything, as they have appealed the first two rulings and will probably appeal the newest one. Regulators determined that requirements Google makes on websites using their search engine were aimed to stifle competitors like Yahoo and Microsoft. Earlier this week, Rhode Island Democratic Representative David Cicilline, chairman of the House Subcommittee on Antitrust, Commercial, and Administrative Law, called for a federal antitrust investigation of Facebook.
Portland News poet Dan Raphael finds there's more to the climate than the weather.
So many global hotspots set to explode and spread. Yemen, Israel, Somalia, Kashmir threatening the global climate. Venezuela worries me especially, as it's close and involves the world's largest oil reserves that must be left in the ground to give our planet a chance of surviving. With the heavy rains in Southeast Africa and America's Midwest, a not-so-gentle wake-up nudge. The healthiest democracy these days is the weather, as a handful of highly polluting countries have grimed and simmered the whole world, as a few countries' seething hate has spread on the global internet winds from the White House to Pittsburgh to New Zealand. Weathermen are entertainers. Political pundits are entertainers. With weather, you only get one channel and the shows are out of our control. My grandpa said, when it rains, you get wet. How long can roofs and apartment walls hold up against the constant wind of injustice, against the snow and rain that, like the isolation they foster, are corrosive in so many ways? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Tonight will be the first spring equinox supermoon in 19 years. It won't happen again until 2030. The equinox will occur tonight at 5:58 p.m. Eastern Time. The supermoon will be hot on its heels, officially reaching its full phase around 4 hours at 9:43 p.m. An equinox, or equinox, is the instant of time when the plane of Earth's equator passes through the center of the sun. If there were ever a time to frolic in the woods, I'd say this is it.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 20th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Emery Mort, Nita Rios, and Jason Chu. And our engineer is Tammy Habteas. The interim director of evening news and public affairs is Lisa Loving. We need more news volunteers. Email lisa at kboo.org to find out. A podcast and transcript of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Emily Gresham Beamer.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge with host Joanne Hardesty. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's The Heather McCoy Show. At 11, on Between the Covers, host David Naiman talks to author Mitchell S. Jackson about Survival Math, a book that explores gangs and guns, near-death experiences, sex work, masculinity, composite fathers, the concept of hustle, and the destructive power of addiction. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. To become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the button marked Donate.
again, this is news from the Boo. We are here talking about More to the Story, third grade musical that was co-written by Jana Losey Crenshaw, myself, and initially the third grade cohort, third grade class, Sunnyside Environmental School. We were talking about the Vanport aspect of the story and how when Vanport was flooded, people were displaced, not only by the natural disaster, but then were kind of corralled into a certain area because of redlining and systemic racism. Mm-hmm. And the resistance and resilience that created a thriving community. And the jazz scene was one of the aspects mm-hmm. of the cultural expression that came out of that community. And so you wrote a song with the help of the third grade class that kind of, you know, tried to channel some of that energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to share a little of how that sounded?
Well, the chorus goes, mm-hmm. if the piano player throws you a crazy chord, you improvise, set it right. If life throws you a hard time, you improvise your life.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of the context of the whole song, even though there's a lot more...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know? It's like, I don't know what kids take in along the way, but I feel like if I put everything that we really want them to know into the song, even if they only understand it 20 years later, it doesn't matter, because if that's what they remember, then I've done my job as a songwriter and activist.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And so I feel like if that's my main focus, then I'll just put my effort there. And anything else that comes along the way that feels difficult to me because I don't have the background to teach social justice the way that you do.
Uh-huh.
It's like if I have a hard time with that, then I know it's in the music anyway.
So here's the question. The next logical question for me is grappling with the issue of appropriation.